Good day. I'm Jackie Judd with the Kaiser Family Foundation. Several years ago, the world was introduced to a young boy from South Africa named Nkosi Johnson. Nkosi was born HIV positive, and when he was 11 and very, very ill from AIDS-related illnesses, he stood before an international audience at the AIDS conference in Durban, South Africa, and said, "Care for us and accept us. We are all human beings." A year later, in 2001, he was dead. If people had forgotten about the long-raging AIDS epidemic in Africa, Nkosi made them remember again. ABC News reporter Jim Wooten has written a book about Nkosi Johnson called We Are All the Same, a story of a boy's courage and a mother's love. Jim, welcome.
Thank you, Jackie, for inviting me.
The first story you tell in this book is about the first time you saw him. He didn't see you. You were peering through a fence. Tell us about it.
I was. Well, it's not my habit to eavesdrop or spy on people as a reporter. But I was going to interview this young boy later in the afternoon, and they were setting up cameras and lights inside this house. This called Nkosi's Haven, where AIDS mothers and their children lived. And he was rehearsing in the garden a speech that he was about to deliver in Durban, South Africa, to the International AIDS Conference. And I heard this very sing-song soprano as I was going in the house, and I stopped and looked and couldn't believe that it was an 11-year-old boy that I was supposed to interview, because he didn't strike me as more than 6 or 7 because of his size. But what he was saying was, we are all the same. He was rehearsing it, getting the phrase down right. And what he meant by that, and the theme of his speech, and really the mantra of his life, was to persuade people that HIV-positive people and those who are suffering from full-blown AIDS are normal people. They happen to be ill, but they're normal people. So he sort of took a leaf from Shakespeare and Shylock and The Merchant of Venice, speaking for marginalized people, who said, you know, we are all the same. You know, if you prick us, do we not bleed? And we laugh and we love and we die. But nevertheless, we're all the same. So treat us like that, you know. And that had been really, as I said, that had been the mantra of his life for several years. That was what he was focused on. Treat us like we're people.
You had covered Africa. You had covered AIDS for many years. What was it you saw in Nkosi that day and in later days that helped you get AIDS in maybe a deeper way than you had prior?
Well, the first thing that happened was I found him so compelling and so irresistible that I abandoned the first rule of journalism, which is to keep a discreet distance between you and the people that you cover. We became friends. We just became close pals and buddies, and there was nothing I could do about it. I don't think it really influenced my reporting, but maybe it did, but what the hell, it did. So, I can't help it. He was a kid who... The most amazing thing about him, and I think the most attractive thing for me, was that despite the fact that he understood that he was in the death grip of a terminal disease, that he would not grow up to be a young man or an old man, he had become a boy of almost extraordinary good cheer. He was joyful. He was joyous. And he loved laughter. He loved fun. He loved being with other children who either HIV positive or not. He just loved being in the middle of a fun situation.
And one of the things you struggle with in the book is answering this question of how did this child, born into such dire circumstances, become joyful, happy? Was it who he was born as? How much of it had to do with his birth mother, a Zulu woman who also died of AIDS? Or his adoptive mother, Gail Johnson, who was a white woman in South Africa?
Well, I'm certainly not going to get into a discussion of nature versus nurture here with you. But I would suggest that it was a bit of both, that he had a great spirit about him, which I think was probably genetic. It was there. But what he learned from living in this family with Gail Johnson, his white adoptive mother, was a thematically ethical statement, which was, as he put it, do all you can with what you have in the time you have where you are. And That was Gail Johnson's theme of her life. She was an AIDS activist, late come to it, but she was still an activist, and she was a tornado. And I think she filled the house with all this love and laughter and purpose, which was very important. And and he lapped it up, he ate it up, and he became a crusader in his own sort of subtle and tentative way.
You describe Gail Johnson as being a very complicated woman.
Very complicated.
And she helped create this crusade for Nkosi. How did that happen? How does he emerge as this kind of world symbol?
It's really pretty simple. He wanted to be a normal person. We are all the same, you know. I'm a normal person. Ergo, if I'm normal, I want to go to school. And amazingly enough, because he was ill, Gail had never thought about sending him to school. They were sort of teaching him to read and to do mathematics at home. And he said, no, I want to go to school. So she marched him down to the neighborhood public school to enroll him. And they said, no, you can't because he has AIDS, because she'd been very open about it and on the admissions form. Well, they didn't know what they were getting into. Neither this school nor the Johannesburg School Board nor anybody else in the country, by challenging Gail Johnson and her beloved little boy. And she waged a really impressive and very, very strategic and tactical fight in the media with the Johannesburg School Board and finally in the South African Parliament. And there is now on the books of South Africa something called Nkosi's Law, which states that no child shall be denied admission to South African public schools because he or she suffers from AIDS. And as a consequence of all this media exposure, both Gail and Nkosi became semi-celebrities in not only in Johannesburg, but all over South Africa, because the country was just then sort of coming to some sort of glimmering awareness of AIDS as a major problem, just only in the mid-1990s. And so they began to be asked, both of them or separately, to appear at this Lions Club or that Kiwanis or to address this convention or something, and he became quite accustomed to that. And then his presence in South Africa became a part of the international AIDS scene, and he was asked to speak at the international conference.
And you set his story and Gail's story, the larger backdrop are the social and political forces that are happening in that country at that time. They're so turbulent. And Nkosi actually manages to become a thorn in the side of President Mbeki, doesn't he?
He does, and Mbeki... Mbeki was a thorn in the side of every person who was aware of AIDS and wanted to do something about it, because President Thabo Mbeki, who was Nelson Mandela's successor, took then and takes now a very bizarre approach to AIDS. First of all, he said there's no such virus as HIV, and even if there is, it doesn't cause AIDS. And the whole international and local AIDS community was just apoplectic. I mean, how could this be? And I must say, no one has ever explained to me why he has taken this rather odd and curious position. He also said, in a country that has more HIV positive and people with AIDS than any other nation on the earth, he also said, you know, I've never met anyone with AIDS. That's what Thabo Mbeki said. And ironically, less than a year after he made that public statement, his press secretary, Parks Manhelano, who was a guy I knew casually, died of AIDS, and he saw him every single day. So there was in the country, because of the government, a kind of reluctance to say, listen, folks, we really have a bad problem here. A lot of people are dying. Thousands of people are dying. Thousands of people are being infected every weekend. We have a really bad problem. We ought to address it. Nobody ever addressed it in the government, because if Mbeki ran the government, ran the African National Congress, which is his party, and they fell right in with this, as I called it, bizarre approach. For instance, you know, there was a lot of pressure in the 90s put on the pharmaceuticals to make available antiretroviral
more
drugs
affordable.
In Africa, the more affordable, or even to give them away.
The access.
And the pressure was great enough that the manufacturers of AZT, one of the principal antiretroviral drugs, offered South Africa, free of charge, all the AZT it wanted. And President Mbeki said, no thanks, no thanks.
But Mbeki and Nkosi end up on the same stage. There is this intersection, and it happens when Nkosi speaks this line, which is the title of your book, "We Are All the Same." What did he say to you, the child say to you later about that experience?
Well, he was very angry. What he actually said
because
was...
Because Mbeki left the stage.
Yeah, it was this huge audience in the Durban soccer stadium, football stadium, as they call it, in that part of the world. And perhaps 15 or 20,000 people live and a televised audience of 50 or 60 million people. And President Mbeki delivered the keynote address just prior to the second keynote address, which was from this pint-sized kid, Nkosi Johnson. Then, but Mbeki knew who he was, and he knew who Gail Johnson was, and he had heard about them. And he finished his speech, and he marched off the stage, and he left the arena. His wife remained. Nkosi took the stage and took on Mbeki in his speech. He said, why can't we have nevirapine, a drug that decreases the mother-to-child transmission by about 30 to 50%. But Mbeki said, no, you can't have that. It's poisoning the children. It's poisoning the mothers. But he took him on in public. And great cheers, great applause, standing ovation. And Mbeki was nowhere to be found. So Nkosi said to me later that he was quite irritated. But let me put it like that. He was not a child to express anger easily, because of his easygoing nature. And I think he was even smiling when he said this, but he was angry that that Mbeki hadn't had the courage to stay and hear him say what needed to be said.
And a final question. Several years after this remarkable child's death, what is his legacy, not only in South Africa, but in how it may have changed, the relationship you had with him may have changed you as a reporter?
Well, I decided, because I have to say it quite honestly, I loved him as though he were one of my own children. And his death left a very large space in my life and in my soul. And I wanted to do something that would preserve this remarkable legacy of Nkosi Johnson. His foster mother was working very hard to do that by expanding Nkosi's havens, raising money all the time. She's, as I said, she's a tornado, and all she wants to do is provide a place for homeless AIDS mothers and their children, people who've been kicked out of their communities and their homes, and for AIDS orphans. And so she's doing that. And I decided that if I wrote a book that would tell the story of Nkosi, and I'm donating most of the proceeds from this book to Nkosi's foundation, that would help me deal with the loss of Nkosi. And because it's quite a loss. I've covered a lot of combat, as you know, a lot of wars, and I've seen men in uniform and men with weapons be very courageous. And but there are all kinds of courage, and Nkosi was the bravest person I think I ever met, because, as I said before, he knew what was happening to him. He really understood his body. He had a relatively sophisticated grasp of what AIDS is and what it does. And despite all of this, he decided that he would do what he could do with what he had in the time he had in the place he was.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming in today. It's a marvelous book. Jim Wooten is the author of We Are All the Same, A Story of a Boy's Courage and a Mother's Love. I'm Jackie Judd with the Kaiser Family Foundation. Good day.